It is not unusual for presidents to flex their constitutional muscles in wartime, as NPR's Nita Totenberg reports.
For the last quarter century, the American presidency has suffered a constant erosion of power through Watergate and the Clinton impeachment, Iran-Contra and the Vietnam War. An increasingly assertive Congress has wrestled power from the president. The public has applauded or at least been happy to have a diminished presidency. Not anymore. Duke Law Professor Walter Dellinger.
The end of the Cold War weakened the presidency, and the beginning of the era of foreign terrorism will reinvigorate the presidency, because there is simply no substitute for the effective use of the presidency in that time of crisis.
Indeed, throughout our history, presidential powers have been expanded in ways few imagined at the time. In the Civil War, President Lincoln imposed martial law on certain areas of the Union with strong Confederate sympathy. He suspended the constitutionally guaranteed right of habeas corpus, the right to go to court to challenge the basis for imprisonment, and he authorized secret military tribunals to try civilians accused of aiding the South. Columbia Law Professor Eben Moglen notes that in World War I, President Wilson faced another problem.
How to summon the force of the American economy to support the war? And for the first time in the history of the United States, Wilson instituted administrative measures for command and control of the domestic economy.
Using broad powers that he obtained from Congress, Wilson commandeered plants and mines, requisitioned supplies, fixed prices, seized and operated the country's communications and transportation networks, and even managed the production and distribution of food. Wilson also faced the traditional problem of assuring domestic security, and did so in the traditional way. He got Congress to pass the Espionage Act, which, among other things, made it a crime to interfere with the draft. Under that law, the U.S. government prosecuted and the Supreme Court upheld the conviction and imprisonment of pamphleteers calling for the peaceful opposition to the draft. President Franklin Roosevelt used Wilson's wartime economic precedents to create the New Deal's federal management of the domestic economy. So when World War II was upon the nation, he built on that structure on an unprecedented scale.
All shipbuilding, most domestic mining and manufacturing, to change completely the labor laws of the United States during the period of the war, to institute wage and price controls pervasively for the first time in American economic history.
And to guard against domestic sabotage, Roosevelt authorized the internment of people of Japanese ancestry, even though two-thirds of them were American citizens. The Supreme Court subsequently upheld the internment, though it did hold unconstitutional the indefinite detention of individuals about whom no specific suspicions could be shown. The ruling, however, was meaningless to the men and women in the camps, since the court ruled that they could be excluded from their homes and they had no place to go. Indeed, the Supreme Court has rarely interfered with the expansion of presidential powers in wartime, and when it has done so after the war is over. In the Civil War, for example, the court ruled that President Lincoln had exceeded his authority in trying civilians at secret military tribunals when the civil courts were still open. But the Supreme Court did not issue its opinion until after the war was over. Professor Moglen notes that while many of the extraordinary powers asserted by presidents in wartime were seen as temporary when enacted, they were building blocks for the future.
Societies change very rapidly in wartime. Wartime causes the kinds of friction and resistance to social change to be overrun. So it is not uncommon in our history to see measures begin in wartime, which may later be withdrawn in peacetime and then reinstituted later.
Thus, the income tax and the draft, first imposed by President Lincoln and withdrawn after the Civil War, were reborn in the next century. The economic powers asserted by President Wilson in World War I were the basis for the New Deal, and President Roosevelt's World War II wage and price controls were the basis for similar controls imposed in peacetime by President Richard Nixon. Nina Totenberg, NPR News, Washington.